This is The Meek Informant, your content source for Legend of the Five Rings, published by Fantasy Flight Games. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Meek Informant, your podcast for the meek and uninformed. I'm Eric, and we have here tonight Adam. Hello, Adam.
Hello, Eric.
Hi. And Nick. Hey, Nick.
Howdy, folks.
Nikimoto, everyone.
Nikimoto. Nick's freshly minted Hatamoto, Crane Hatamoto. Congratulations, Nick.
Thank you.
We're going to be talking a bit about that, but Nick recently got Hatamoto at the Atlanta Kotai?
I honestly don't know. I think it's Kotai. I'm going to go with Kotai.
Kotai.
I was wrong about Hante, but I'm going with it, so...
You finally admit things.
Yeah, I know. Wait, Hante on the podcast. Hante is not pronounced like auntie.
Oh, it's Hante?
Yeah, it's Hante. It's Hante.
All right. Now that we've settled that, I guess we've misinformed everyone, and maybe we just did it again.
No, three of the podcasters misinformed everyone. One did not.
Man.
What else?
Well, I trust you, Nick. You're the keeper of knowledge, so you got a little bit of weight on your shoulders. You're informing the masses. Peter, Steve, or whatever our one listener's name is.
Yeah.
I should know. If we only had one, I should know. Anyway, tonight I can't find my notes. Where'd my notes go, everybody? They're there.
Tonight is not the deck building episode. That's what this is not.
Notably.
We owe it. It is owed.
We said that our next episode was gonna be on deck building. It is not this one, but that's coming. Nick even wrote up an outline already and is all jazzed to talk about it.
Yes.
We have more pressing current events, namely Nick, that we want to talk about and talk them up. Other things before we start with that, yes, it's been a month or so since our last podcast episode, but if you go and check out our YouTube channel, if you haven't, we've released like at least two videos a week since then or more. We are hopping on that. Nick and I are definitely producing a bunch. Adam, I know you've put out a couple of your Discord games, and it seems like you're gearing up for that. Johnny's been talking about how he wants to do some more of a new thing that we're trying to get organized and flowing, the Sensei series that we want to try and start. And we're talking about all these series. We'll see. You know, no promises.
It's whatever we're interested in doing on a random night of the week.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. I'm not promising schedule. You know, Adam and I both have multiple children, and you know, I think everybody we've got all adult crap that's taking up too much L5R time in our lives.
See, there's your mistake.
But we love doing this still. And actually, you guys, a random aside, you guys did some Arkham Horror stuff. We didn't even have in our notes here, but you guys did Arkham Horror. You should probably.
That's right. Yeah, if anybody has any interest in Arkham Horror, the card game, Johnny and I are doing a playthrough. It's on our YouTube channel in a little separate playlist of the Dunwich Legacy, which is the first deluxe expansion of that. We're newcomers to the game, but our sponsor, Luxury Playstyle, who helps bring this episode to you tonight or today or whenever you're listening to it, Maddie, the owner of that company, sent us some tokens for Arkham Horror, and we decided to showcase them and to play the game and record it. So we have some, I think two games of that up right now and a third that's like in processing. So yeah, check that out. We're going to try and do that over the next month or two. What else? We also still plan to finish our Clan Champion podcast series, but you know, we've got a lot of little projects. We're just going to string them along.
Definitely.
Anything else? Oh, I guess like we're not really a news podcast, but if we're the only source of information that you have for L5R, you should know that there was a third restricted list update, and RRG, so the RRG and including a new RL.
That's a rules reference guide and restricted list.
Thank you, Nick.
Right. And that included the restricted list and the errata. So like there are some errata cards as well.
Right. They changed the text on Tadaka to make it a little bit weaker.
Slightly.
A Restoration of Balance, a lot weaker. And
City of the Open Hand.
Oh, yeah. Which there's been some argument about whether it's weaker or not.
Yeah, I've actually heard the argument that it is stronger. So the change to it was that it used to be if your honor is lower than your opponent's, take an honor from them. Now it is, if your honor is lower than an opponent's, choose one. Either they lose an honor or you gain an honor. So yes. The argument is that it's stronger now because you don't need to find more ways to tank your own honor. You can just get yourself low and then drag them down turn after turn.
And that's, I think, effectively what the design choice was there. And I agree with that statement. And as a City of the Open Hand favorite, my favorite stronghold, I agree with that. But with that said, it means that you as a Scorpion player doing that has to be way more engaged, which is, again, what I think the design team was looking for, right? It was so easy as a Scorpion player to just be like, eh, tap the box, cool, I take one from you. Like, yeah. Now you have to manage your own honor just as well as your opponent does.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I think it makes for a more interesting experience.
Yeah, I would agree. Like, I mean, it's frustrating, yeah. But I agree.
It makes you, you know, it's like Scorpion has to be a little more daring and like ride the knife edge a little bit more, which is cool.
Yep.
For me, because I don't play Scorpion. Although I have played some and they are quite fun. I'm having a good time doing a little exploration, mostly because I just can't seem to win games with Dragon lately. Tried a little Phoenix, gonna get a put out some videos with just different clans, trying some stuff out, see how it goes.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, harkens back to what the point of this podcast is, right? Is like trying new stuff, building community, being interested in the game. Like, I think that's great. You just put out like a Eric learns to play Phoenix video, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Orange is a good color for cards to be, I guess. They're strong. They're strong, especially against Lion, I guess. I don't know. So Nick, you're a Hatamoto. What in the world even is a Hatamoto?
So a Hatamoto is sort of a title they give out to people who perform well with a particular clan at the bigger tournaments, which are called Kotai. Kotai? Did I say it wrong again? Anyway.
We just agreed it was Kotai.
God. Anyway, the point is, at them K tournaments. basically, you get it by being either top of your clan in Swiss, so the highest ranking player out of the Swiss portion, or at a normal K tournament, Kote.
I think that I actually was wrong, and I told you that the one that we didn't agree, we can confirm upon re-listening to it.
My wife, having looked it up on Google, says it is Kote.
Kote, we just heard her.
We just heard her yell at me. So yes, if you place in the top two, so if you make it to finals at a Kote, you become a Hatamoto if you weren't one out of Swiss. And then at a Grand Kote, it is the top four, I believe.
That sounds right, because I missed it by a smidgen at Gen Con last year. Because, hey, guess what? There's a lot of Scorpion players.
Turns out, yeah.
Yeah, I think I was like, I don't know. I was like a couple away, one or two away. And I was like, ah, frustrating.
So there are a couple of benefits to being a Hatamoto. One of them is, and this is like the main reason that I wanted it, you get an invite to Worlds. So Meeks are going to Worlds in November.
All right.
Yeah.
That should be pretty cool.
Yeah, because you were trying to figure out a way to cheat the system with the ECs going on around here.
Yeah,
I've just gone to every EC that New England has had to offer, which is actually like a substantial number of them.
Like
right
a
now.
Lot. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I was waiting for, because the way the invites work at the ECs, if someone already has an invite for that year, it kind of trickles down one place. So I was waiting for like the top like eight people to be, already people with invites, and then I could get the invite just by placing ninth.
Now I'm going to be the one that gets to do that, hopefully. Or Eric.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd have to like... It. I'd have to scoop to my opponent just to avoid that, because if I get the invite, it will be wasted. I won't be allowed to go.
Oh, yeah. See, you can't do that.
I'm going to be the generous benefactor to someone who wants to go.
There you go.
So how did you become a Hatamoto? Did you talk?
Hold on. There's a couple other cool things, right? You got a mat.
Oh, I do get a mat. I get a big
you
pin.
Get pins.
Oh. If you defeat me in a Kotai from now on, you will get a Hatamoto Breaker, which I got one of those for beating Steve Palumbo, the eventual champ in Swiss.
So, which is one of my favorite things about this. That's my favorite thing about the system.
Yeah.
So tell me, did they give you like a whole bunch of those to give out?
No, no, no. So you actually get them from the tournament organizers when they happen. So you only get a Hatamoto Breaker pin at Kotai.
Okay, so I thought it was like anytime anybody like beats a Hatamoto, like they have to give out this pin. And
I mean, that's what it is, but it's not. You don't get like a pile of them.
Right? Yeah, but it's only at a Kotai. I thought it was like any tournament or even like a casual thing or something. Like they just give you a stack of these pins to give out.
No, that'd be awesome.
One other thing worth noting about Hatamoto. So there is a series of different contests that go on throughout a Kotai season. Kotai, whatever. Anyway, I've gone back and forth on this so many times.
Reference your wife.
Using myself.
You know what? I'm going to just throw in this random thing. Coyote, who is on like every single viewing of anything by anything L5R, on Discord, you could just call it Coyotes now.
Yeah,
just,
that's a generous mispronunciation. I like that.
Yeah, just call it Coyotes. He'd love that. He'll listen to this. He'll love it.
There is a system called Glory and Favor Points, and I honestly do not remember how they are counted, but I know that wins by Hatamoto count double. For whatever that's worth.
Glory is the number in the middle right of the card that when you're dishonored.
Nope, it's... Not quite. But yes, it's this.
There's a spreadsheet. Story
prizes are determined. Yes.
Yeah, there's a spreadsheet going on, and that's how you win the series. So, us Scorpions won Toshirimbo, and we're actually in the lead now for the, what's this name of the Kunchu. Sword?
The Kunchu season.
Yeah, Kunchu season, yeah.
The Ancestral Sword of the
Hunter. Which is, I won't give any spoilers, but is, it's in the story arcs that have been currently been posted on FFG's website. So, if you want to know more about that sword, it's pretty cool. You should read them.
Yeah, you guys definitely want that. Trust me.
Yes.
The last time Kunchu was given out as a story prize, it was given to the crab in the old game. They won all these tournaments and got the Ancestral Sword of the Hante as their story prize. And it was given to them by a dark god-possessed Hante emperor driving it through the chest of Hida Kasada, who then limped away and died.
Sounds
yes. So these are all good things.
Yeah, so you guys definitely want it, let me tell you.
I think the consensus in Scorpion is that we don't want anyone else to have it, and that's why we want it.
That's fair, because you guys only trust yourselves, jerks.
I don't really love the idea of the strong get stronger, where the clans that do really well get rewarded with cool stuff.
But what if the clan that does really well gets its champion stabbed in the chest with a giant sword?
I'm on board with that. I'm on board.
See, okay. This is things that can happen.
Although I feel like FFG is less sadistic than...
No, I think they're setting up to do that, though. They're definitely... They're putting enough stop gaps into the game that they could do that. Not yet, but I think it could be coming down the road.
Yeah, so just a good example of this, actually, of a story prize that was good in some ways and not great in others, is in the Crane World's Choice was to send Kakita Kaizen to the lands of the Fox Clan. And in the story where they go to the Fox Lands, he's accosted by some forest spirit and just cuts it in half. And the fox that he's traveling with, well, now a crane, but was originally a fox, was absolutely horrified, because that's not how you deal with spirits in this forest. It's the wrong thing to do, and he probably pissed all of the spirits in the forest off. So, that's kind of an instance where, yeah, we got the story prize. Kakita Kaizen's out of captivity, and that's really cool. But he also pissed off an entire forest full of animal spirits, and that's not going to end well.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so let's get back to this Kotai Coyote.
Got it.
Last but not least, we need to mention if you go and Nick, if you go to another Kotai or Worlds and you play another clan, you have you're giving up your Hatamoto for the clan you currently can have. You can't have Hatamoto in multiple clans.
Correct. Yeah.
So that's probably the last thing that people that are listening might not know and want to know if they're new.
I also heard on the Jade Throne, MD was talking about how, like, if you go to win multiple events, if you're like maybe it's the glory points thing you're talking about, but like the top performing Hatamoto for a clan gets like a flight too. They pay for the hotel and the flight to the world, which is a kind of a thing.
That's part of the points thing.
All right. That's crazy.
It's over the series.
I didn't realize that was a thing until I heard him talking about it. But yeah, that's pretty cool.
I guess they're trying to keep it on the hush, the down hush low. We're going to call it that from now on.
Sure. Right, yeah, so
that will catch on.
So coyotes in Atlanta, what are they like? What's Atlanta like?
Yeah, Atlanta is very hot and humid. Like as we were flying in, because we flew in from Boston, because no way in hell I'm driving to Georgia. But as we flew in, you could like see the layer of humidity over the city as you're coming down. It's like, oh,
no, those are the evil spirits. They were mad at all Ukraine players.
I hope you didn't
probably
cut them in half.
Probably it. Yeah. So it was extremely hot all the time, everywhere. And yeah, that was fun. But the venue itself was actually pretty cool. Like it was this giant like atrium that probably was like 10 stories tall. And we were just playing at the very bottom of it. I don't know. It was a really cool setting for it. It got pretty hot because it was directly open to the sun. Like I was expecting like a little like conference room off to one side or something like that. And it was not. It was a little weird because it was in this hotel and like all up the 10 stories up were people's balconies.
Oh,
like for their rooms.
Yep. Yeah.
So their rooms like looked out onto us. And I don't know. That was a little awkward. Like there'd be people like out there just trying to like enjoy their weekend and they're looking down on us playing.
I've been to quite a few big conferences and stuff. So a con was going on there, but that was not where this was at. So this was its own thing somewhere else. And right? Is that correct? Like it
kind
was
of,
its
so there were some con events being held in this hotel.
Did you have to pay for a badge to play L5R and pay for your entry into the Coyote?
No, you didn't have to pay for a con badge. Right. But there were like other venues, other rooms at that same hotel were being used for the con for like role playing and stuff.
Cool.
So yeah, cool. Yeah, it was good.
So how did you prepare for this event?
So you know that episode of South Park where they're all playing WoW and they just like hang out in a basement for it? Yeah.
Yes.
It's depressingly close to that. I actually took the week off before the Kotai because I wanted to get in as many games as I possibly could.
That is dedication.
I played like 6 or 7 games a day, probably. In the time coming up to it with a locked deck list. That was the big thing too, is that I'd been messing around with my deck list a lot since the Crane pack came out because I wasn't sure like how many duels I needed, which stronghold I should be using. I was really undecided on a lot of stuff and I just decided to lock it in about 2 weeks before. And because I figured that, you know, even if it's not the ideal deck, you know, even if I'm 1 or 2 cards off from where I quote unquote should be, I'm going to do a lot better with it if I've played, you know, 60 games than if I've, you know, just thrown it together and, oh, this is the better deck, but I didn't like, you know, prepare it as well.
That is cool. Cool is subjective, I guess. But
yeah, take a week off to play a card game.
Yeah, but I mean, you took the week off, but you also probably wanted to take the week off, like, this was a vacation, right? It's a vacation.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was really good.
We can justify this. Come on.
No, I've done that. Like this is like a thing. Like you put those buffer days in between. Like when I go to Gen Con, I put a buffer day in before and after and like just excuse it as it's part of vacation.
Yeah, no, I mean I'm jealous. It sounds fun. I wish I could swing that. That's great. So you heard it here first, folks. You want to do good? Just quit your job, play L5R full time, and you'll do great.
So I was distracted by the Bruins game. Sorry, everyone who's listening. It's my first time saying it, but I am definitely watching the Bruins game, the Stanley Cup Finals. Did you mention that you did any meta call choices for your deck?
Yes, there were two in particular. One of them was I was playing around a little bit with trying to fit in enough Shugenja, like with Asahina Takamori and things like that, to run Cloud. And I decided to pull it out because Takamori is kind of awkward to play, but it left me with these two slots on my conflict side.
Hold on. Wait, stop. Who these characters? I think I know Takamori, but fill us in.
Yeah, Takamori is a 4-cost 0/0 Courtier Shugenja with 3 glory. And the ability, after you play a Crane character, choose an opponent's character with equal or lower printed cost, that character cannot assign as an attacker or defender for the remainder of this turn.
It's really good,
but you gotta include it. Exactly the right place to play him, like, because he's a 0/0 and he needs to be honored to have any stats whatsoever. It's very easy to pay 4 to do nothing, right?
Right. You're basically forcing yourself to have to use your way of the cranes for putting it on there, like exactly. If you wanted to be in a conflict.
Yep. So, and it's a little awkward to play, and I decided not to play with him because you need to know when you want to buy him, basically. And he requires a little bit more from deck construction. I was running like a bunch of uniques, and he's actually worse with uniques because you can have flops where you just can't trigger him. Because
you can't buy anybody.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
Or buy the big costers that you want to, like, say.
That's actually a really good point. I hadn't thought about that.
This big dude across the board can't attack.
Yeah, you're expect to see a lot more 2x cards in Crane. It's the same case for Uji, actually, because Uji should allow you to skip the dynasty phase. But if all you flip are uniques you already have out, then
he can't do anything.
Exactly.
Right. So, yeah. Interesting.
Anyway, so I decided not to play with him, which left me with two slots in my conflict deck that had been Cloud the Mines, and I've been playing with a lot, and it had enough attachments in it that they couldn't always remove all of them. So I just decided to throw in two above questions. Above question is kind of a weird card. It's like a little bit overcosted. It's a 1-cost 0/0 attachment that the attached character cannot be chosen as the target of opponent's events. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you would put it on your characters to defend them against like assassination and stuff like that. But a lot of times the better way to use it is to put it on opponent's characters so they can't bonsai them. I actually put it in there specifically for Crab because I didn't want them using Fight On, Mountain Does Not Fall, Bonsai, Spreading the Darkness, things like that on their own characters, on their big tower. So
to defend your honor, right? Did you say that?
Yeah. It does also block them from using that character for Defend Your Honor because, long story short, the rules, even though Defend Your Honor never says choose on it, and we talked about how choose is what means targeting, the rule book says choose when you initiate a duel. So it counts as targeting, and they can't be the target of their own event, which means no Defend Your Honor. So
yeah, there was some discussion about that specific, like, choose being in the explanation of duels on Reddit earlier today that I was talking with somebody about.
Yep.
So you were on stream twice, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. Once against Crab and once against Phoenix. Oh,
how
I
many
Kasadas
did you miss?
I missed 0.
Yay!
You've graduated.
We did it. Kasada we did school. It.
I should say the other meta call card was I slotted in 3 Kakita Yuri, which is a 0/3 with 2 glory courtier for 3 that has a political duel, and the controller of the duel's loser cannot declare military conflicts. It's just in there for the unicorn matchup because it kind of kills unicorn.
And I have seen that card a lot lately, and I agree it's really good, and I like your meta call choice on it, but I've also seen it backfire on some people who kind of play it a little bit off at the wrong time where it's a little awkward. Like if you don't use it the right time, or if you use it at the wrong time is probably the right way to say it, that it can actually ruin a second conflict for the Crane character.
Yeah,
Crane player. So you yeah, but no, yeah, it's for a unicorn, like totally, like that saves you a ton.
If they outbid the Crane player.
Well, because I mean, there are times where that can happen, right? Like there's definitely situations where you can have a boosted up character in the conflict, and that if they bid right, they can do it. And like sometimes you'll forego the honor to bid a little bit higher where the Crane player might not. And then now it's like, oh, that just slows them down. And some of those decks like to play the slow game. So
yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I feel like there's something to be said for like the surprise. So many people like dual bid one, but like the occasional, like just outbidding, just okay, I'm going to spend some honor here for this, can throw people off guard.
Yeah. It depends on the effect really. You know, there's like some that I know my opponent's not going to spend money on, or spend fate on, and
honor?
Then whatever.
The third resource.
Yeah. Well, and one of them not even being a resource. So yeah. In the game. All right. Yeah. So some I know they're not going to spend it on. Like I threw a lot of Gakita Dojos that the net effect of them was absolutely nothing at this tournament because they turned on my box. So like I had guest of honor like Gakita Dojo people who didn't have activated abilities all the time. Just to honor her.
Can I just say that I actually think that card, I don't think it's probably not RL worthy. That card has become the bane of my existence because of it with Kakita Dojo. Kakita Dojo with the new box, right?
It's so good.
It's so good. It is. I had somebody flip two of those, and it was like, I can't defend. I can't attack. I literally should do nothing right now, and that's the better thing for me to do. And like that's the state of it. And I was just like, wow, that's really freaking annoying.
Peasant's advice. It's the new meta.
Yeah, but still, like that's still, it's still like so situational, right? Like the issue is, it's one of those high roll situations where those like one or two Kakita Dojos come up, and you're like, oh, I have a Peasant's Advice, or I don't. Like it's all so flop dependent, right?
Yes,
they're definitely high roll.
My suggestion was a little tongue in cheek, although that card has a ton of utility.
It does. It does
for sure.
So you were on stream. This was how do you say it? Hisushi stream.
Hishu, I believe it's Hishu Gaming. HISSHOU Gaming on Twitch. I'm talking to them about if they repost their videos onto like YouTube because there's not a lot of videos up there right now. But they're currently all the Atlanta stuff is still up there.
Cool. If they don't, maybe we could get them to be down and we can rip it and rehost it for them if they're not interested in doing the work, if they're fine with that. But we'll chat.
Yeah.
But so I actually watched the streams. They were a lot of fun. It's fun to follow along a fellow Meek and root for you. So you didn't disappoint. That was cool. I think everybody was. There was a couple of matches where we were watching and things looked a little dicey and. Did you ever feel like you were losing in any of those besides the one you did lose in that first Swiss rounds?
My first game was extremely close. He was playing this weird deck that like it was like a Scorpion good stuff break your provinces deck, which I've never really seen, like, or at least not recently. So I'm used to Scorpion being either like the hard dishonor or the like covert like keyword like very focused decks, and this was just like that guy's kind of good, they've got stats, and like they were playing Yunako and like I think there were like two Bayushi Kachikos in the deck. They're just
was,
you know,
was there a Hiroe? Like that would be like so unique.
I didn't see a Hiroe, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was in there either. Like I think
I
saw
the guy with the little guitar.
Yeah
the 0/4 courtier with the harpoon.
Yes.
And someday he'll come back. He'll come back and we'll play him again.
He's got a cool alt art.
Yes, he does.
So yeah, you saw this like weird Scorpion.
Yeah, that one I was pretty close to losing until all my Guest of Honor showed up, and turns out Guest of Honor is a pretty good card.
So was it on breaks then? Because he was like using more of his Dynasty stuff?
Yeah, basically. He had a bunch of Dynasty stuff. He played, like, the Kachko first turn, I think, in an attempt to get rid of my guest, and I managed to keep the Kachko from triggering. And that kind of, yeah, that I think was a big swing. But I think we still both got to, like, each on three breaks. And then we kind of had to make the argument. I kind of had to make the argument that, like, look, I'm going first. My board is overwhelming. I'm going to win when we start the next, if we were to start the next round, I'd like you to concede. So it wasn't even like a clear out and out victory. It was close. So
yeah, that's worth mentioning though. I feel like that's something that people that go to these things should understand. Like, you know, conceding is definitely better if you want to try and do well.
Yeah, because if you concede, you get a point. If you don't concede and the opponent ends up winning the next turn, then they get 10 points and you get 0. So,
yeah,
big difference.
Isn't it 6 points and 0?
It's 6 and 0 if you go to what's called a modified win.
Oh, the modified win.
Both go to time and you it's determined by points. But if your opponent doesn't concede and you go past time and you're in that next 5 minutes, and then you win outright, you get points and they don't. So
right. So what was the meta like? Were there any, like, I know you said you were a little bit surprised about this deck, but were there any other notable surprises or like clans changing up in the way that they played generally there?
No, I think most of them were pretty straightforward. I did see one of the Lion guys was playing HMT, which I will always find surprising. But I wasn't aware of all the changes and testing that have been going on in Scorpion, with people coming up with like hard Dishonor burn decks.
Oh, I thought, man, that's my fault. I thought I mentioned we had like a game that you and I were gonna play or.
Right. No. So we talked about it, but when we talked about it, it was, oh yeah, Simkov has this weird deck, and like Simkov's the only one playing it.
Oh no, but that's a different deck. Weird. That's not the deck that was actually quite different.
Entirely possible. But like I was expecting that when I went up against Scorpion at this tournament, it was going to be Ian Fight from the local meta's deck, which is basically every source of covert you can possibly get, no real pumps. And Kyuden Byushi with a bunch of self-dishonor to make it so your opponent can't defend, get you to exactly breaking, and go from there. So just a, kind of a blitz drop berry focused deck with like Crane Splash for Political Rival and stuff like that. And most of the Scorpion decks I saw there were on Phoenix Splash for 3 Display of Power.
Yeah. I've tested 2 and 3, and I am... I'll put it at 99.9% positive that you want 3. Like if you're running that, you really do.
And like even within that, there was a huge amount of variation. There was one deck that bid 5 the first 2 turns. There was one deck that literally never moved its bid dial off of 1. So it was interesting. That part I wasn't really prepared for. Other than that, I didn't see anything that really took me by surprise. You know, Kyuden Asawa is still Kyuden Asawa. People are still playing Tadaka. Crab hasn't changed in like 2 years, you know. So everything else.
What clans did you? What clans did you not play against?
I did not play Lion or Unicorn, so my meta call with Yuri did not really work out. Although, I will say Yuri ended up pretty good against Scorpion because it let me stop them from double poking me sometimes, so I didn't have to worry as much about undefended challenges.
What was the so you played Dragon?
Yes. Yep. Dragon was just on like the standard monk package.
Did Keeper of Water?
I don't remember, to be honest. I think it was actually Seeker of Void still. I think.
Mm. Really?
Huh. I'm very conflicted about that. We also didn't mention that the roles changed a little while ago. Well, maybe we did. Roles changed in the RNG update. So everybody's got new roles. Every podcast has talked about what that means for all the clans, so we're not going to cover it. But
it's, so I just looked up. I just looked up that dragon deck. It was apparently Keeper of Water. I just didn't see a fight on all game. So
was this the G going?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So the guy that top whatever Ford or something.
Yeah, top Ford.
Yeah, I haven't seen that deck. He's gonna do a write up after like the next tournament, he says in the Dragon chat. And I mean, I think it's basically just the standard test stuff, but I don't know. I've been tinkering around with the Unicorn Splash, and it's I think it's good, but it's maybe not great. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's definitely an interesting deck. So it just, yeah, it's hard to get people off of the stuff that Anil plays. So
yeah, that's true. So any other notes on Atlanta and shout outs to stuff, people down there, or anything like that?
Real quick, just shout out to Lenial Eric Leong, who was like the most craney crane there, not only wearing a crane jersey and everything, but giving out gifts to literally anyone who asked. He had promos for every clan. First player tokens, actually designed by Rihanna McCulloch, the local artist extraordinaire. Then I got three different Crane Clan Imperial Favors, also designed by Rihanna. So
nice.
Yeah, he was just like, yeah, just go up and down the table and ask everybody what clan they're playing, bring me back the list, and then just go hand them out. So like, I spent like the first 20 minutes I was there just passing out promos from this guy to everybody. So it was pretty awesome. Cool.
You were his lackey.
Yeah, basically. So like, yeah. And like, I just met a ton of people there. It'd be way too many to call out, but like Aaron, Kenny, other Nick, from Crane Chat, Matt, who hung out with us, after the second day, Sparks. I got to meet Palumbo and beat Palumbo. That was pretty cool. You know, it was a great time. Like, I would highly recommend if you guys can get out to one of these tournaments. Like, they really do draw people from like all over the place. Like Jim Lewin, the Dragon player. Like, it just, yeah, way too many to mention.
Yeah, I'll echo it because like you're listing a bunch of names. Like, I've only been to Gen Con as far as for L5R stuff besides ECs, and everyone's so welcoming. It's like at Gen Con, at least there's a Scorpion dinner. So like we have a dinner with just like 50 to 60 Scorpion players. It was amazing. Yeah, I might be embellishing the number a little bit, but it seemed like a lot of people. And like at the Grand Kotai, like so many people, everyone like between rounds just sits and chats, and like you just, oh, you're that person from the chat and stuff. So yeah, it is nice.
It was awesome.
It's community building.
Exactly. Yeah, you just show up and like just knowing that everybody there has like the same, like, I don't know, vocabulary. Like, you can just jump into any conversation about like, oh yeah, that card is such BS.
You can be a nerd.
Like, oh, you love doing minutes. That.
Unbridled.
It's like your
it's amazing.
That card's crap.
We done. So. Sorry. you can let your freak flag fly.
Exactly.
That's good, man. Yes. Speaking of ECs, you mentioned, Adam, there are a couple coming up around here that we're, I know at least most of us are going to this one coming up this Saturday. I'm excited. It's my second EC Gardner Game Nights in Gardner, Mass. Is having a tournament, which is the Seven Swords tournament this weekend.
Yeah.
So Chuck is Chuck like a store owner or just the organizer there?
I believe he's one of the store owners, but he has another job. Like that's his like second thing.
Yep. Okay. He's put together a tournament where he has seven katanas. Well, actually more, because I think the top winner gets like three or something. Or
the top gets a full Daisho set, so you will get a katana, wakizashi, and a tanto on
it's
a
ridiculous.
Stand. It's ridiculous. So there's right, actually then, it's a nine blade tournament.
Yeah, the top of clan each gets a sword. It's pretty crazy. So that is this coming Saturday, which is the 1st of June.
First.
And I think the tournament starts at 11.
Yes, it starts. Correct. So I think that's when it starts. You know, Reg is like 10.
So if we, I'm going to try and get this out tomorrow, which is the Thursday. So if you hear this and you're in the area, come by if you want. And then next month, our local game store here.
Same month. Midgard, same month.
Oh yeah. Well, okay. The first versus the, what is it?
22nd.
The 22nd of June, Midgard Comics and Games is having their first EC. And, everybody but me is going to be at that from here, right? Johnny and you guys are both going to be there?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Yep, we'll be streaming. It's going to be great.
Cool. Yeah, so keep an eye out, you know, our Twitch and YouTube channels for those. We have a backlog of the last EC that we are trying to get through. So much L5R content. And I also like want to play
and
games
the,
too.
That Scorpion tournament, so people can see why everyone was happy that I remembered Quesada.
Yeah. Oh, that game is like coming up next. I think we got to record that soon.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do.
I think it's like the one remaining game that we have to do on there or something.
Yep.
So, I guess that's all the local stuff. And then, Nick, why don't you talk about our friend Alpha Squid?
Yes. So Alpha Squid is a vocal, I would say, player in the Crane Chat. Vocal in a good way. He went to a convention out in Arizona. It was the Phoenix Fan Fusion, formerly Phoenix Comic Con, and ran a bunch of, well, one of those was a PH, so. He ran a bunch. He put together demo decks and things like that. And I thought it would be a good idea to talk to him about, you know, teaching new people the game and how you got them into it and things like that. So, yeah.
So he ran demos. You cut out for me. I'm not sure for everybody. Demos for new people trying to teach the game, right?
Yep. Teaching the game, kind of pre-built decks and all that. So yeah. I think he got in 4 demo games. So 8 people total. But then, kind of ran the demos for everybody who was watching around too. So yeah.
Awesome.
So he's going to be our guest now.
Yeah, we're gonna cut to an interview with Alpha Squid to have him, you know, just talk about his experiences demoing the game. And, you know, it's kind of our shtick is getting new players into the game. So this will be a chance for us to maybe pick up some ideas to maybe we can hold a Meek Informant Learn L5R event that we've been talking about at Midgard or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So it'll give us the insider scoop. So here we go. It's the interview time.
So we are joined today by Alpha Squid, as he goes on the main Discord, aka David Lattimore. This is a Crane player, like I mentioned, who recently demoed the game at Phoenix Fan Fusion. So we wanted to have him on and talk about the process of setting that up and what the experience was like. So welcome, David.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I guess question number one here, right, is like, why did you decide to do this?
So I've been playing L5R for several months now, since like right before the Scorpion pack came out. And I hadn't been able to play much with my local community. And when I finally did, they were a decent sized bunch, about 10 or so. But they were playing on a night that I couldn't really go. So I mostly kept like online for the most part with my play and did like local events occasionally. And over time, the community has slowly gotten smaller and smaller to where my understanding was no one was showing up to the open play night every Wednesdays, and very few people would show up to the tournaments. And so I started getting onto the local Facebook and getting with people and trying to get, you know, more interest and more people playing. And, you know, I think some of that was there was no product out for a little bit and stuff. And then now there is. So we've got a little bit more interest, but I've been wanting to really try to find ways to grow the community, my local community here in Phoenix, Arizona. And so when I saw that there was the Phoenix Fan Fusion coming up, previously known as Phoenix Comic Con, I really wanted to get in there for at least one day and demo the game and see if I could grow the local community at all.
Do you want to shout out to your local game store to see if you can find anybody in the area that might listen to our podcast?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We play at Game Depot, which is in Tempe. On Southern and McClintock, we have open play nights on Wednesday. People are usually there between about 4 and 8 p.m. And then there's events posted on their Facebook, usually on Saturdays, occasionally also on Wednesdays.
It's kind of a stretch that we actually do have like some people from all over listening, which is kind of cool now. So maybe you'll get somebody who shows up.
That would be awesome.
Stranger things have happened.
So, like, how did you go about this, like, logistically? Like, is there, like, a process, at least for this convention, for getting a table set up, or how did that work?
So it'd been a few years since I had gone, but when I did go a few years ago, they had an area where it was kind of just like open board game play or card game or whatever, where people were demoing games. So I was hoping I could just take my stuff and go in there and sit down and play. Just to be sure, I did reach out to them via their website, the Phoenix Fan Fusion website, and sent them an email letting them know I was interested in doing this and making sure it would be okay if, you know, I had my own badge and I brought my own stuff. Could I just get a table and play? And they said, yeah, absolutely. That's what it's there for. And they would be totally cool with it. So yeah, that was it was super easy just for this type of convention to be able to do that.
How many people do you think attended this convention?
I don't know. It's a 4-day convention. It's in the Phoenix Convention Center in downtown Phoenix. People drive in from all over Arizona and out of state to go there.
It's a pretty big event.
It's thousands of people, yeah.
Ah, cool.
Did you have any way of like advertising, as part of the con that you were doing it, or did you just flag random people down on the like walking by and say stop, play, blah, blah, blah?
Yeah, one thing I might have done if I had prepped more, because I didn't do as much prep as I would have liked to for this. Turns out I've never done anything like this before, and it's a little bit more time consuming than I thought it was. I figured I'd, 3 hours knock everything out, and it took much longer than that, as things tend to do. So for this, if I had thought I had to advertise, I probably would have mostly done it through Twitter and used like the Phoenix Fan Fusion hashtag or something, just let people know, hey, I'll be playing this game and come check it out if you want to.
Do you think that would have helped though? Because it sounds like we'll probably get into this, but like you were pretty slammed like the whole time. So like you didn't have anybody helping you, right? So like you had one table set up, right?
Right. I had one table set up. It was just me. And yeah, I was as busy as I could have hoped to be. It went beyond what I had expected. I was thinking maybe I'd get one, two people interested enough to actually like, play. Mm-hmm. And no, I was busy the entire time I was there. I wish I could have done more days and done it for longer.
So do you think if you had like a, a companion there to help do, you could do two, you could have pulled off two tables?
Easily.
Oh, nice. That's great to hear.
Was it just foot traffic that was people walking by and they were like, what's this?
It was. So one of the things I did is I reached out to another local store here through somebody that I knew on the Discord. It's a store called Amazing Discoveries, which is down in Tucson. And apparently they have one here in the Phoenix metro area that I've not been to. I just learned about it this weekend. But I reached out to them too because I saw that they were going to be running card games there as well through the Phoenix Fan Fusion website. And I reached out to them and let them know what I was going to be doing. And the guy that I talked to is the guy who like runs the L5R events down there. I met him at the Elemental Championship last month, and it was great. And so he said he'd reach out to the guy running it up there and see if they could support me and give me space there, which was super cool of them. So I want to give them a shout out. They're an awesome group of guys, and they got a pretty sizable community down there in Tucson that meets all the time. So I got in touch with them. They said, yeah, they'd support me. And I thought that was great. Unfortunately when I got there, so I had made the assumption that they would be up in the same area I had thought of before, the big open play area, but they actually had like their own separate conference room, set aside that they had set up because they're gonna be running Magic tournaments and stuff all day and other card games, other collectible card games. And when I went in there to set up, I was a little worried that the people that I'd be getting in there were people that were there to play Magic or for a specific purpose. I wasn't going to get random people walking by. I was getting people that were going to come to that room for a purpose. And I let them know my concerns and they said, hey, let's go check out the open game area. And they helped me find a place to set up there. And that was perfect. It was people coming up there looking for something to do. So yeah. That was where I wanted to be. And that's, I just found a table. Unfortunately, there are giant round tables, which isn't ideal for a card game, but you just, set up diagonally on the side and it gave me plenty of room to set up my display, which I think helped a lot.
Well, that's like a really good recon. Cause I think most people, I think myself included, are like, oh, okay, I guess this is a fine spot. I would have set up in the group.
Well, they did mention the tournament organizer guy that I was in touch with. His name's Ed. Ed had done demos for them down there a previous year, I think last year, and didn't get very much traffic or very many people to play with them. So, with that feedback, I decided to go the other route.
Yeah, smart.
Yeah, we saw a picture you I think you shared a picture of the setup you had. We will we'll get a link to that in the show notes if anyone wants to check it out. Seems pretty fancy. You displayed some boxes and stuff, and you have the two-player mat from FFG.
Yeah, I think the two-player mat was really a good idea. I went out of my way to you know purchase one of those beforehand. I did not own one. I thought it would you know look nice and help people. And then I went ahead and I brought in a core box and the clan packages, the packaging for those, and the Children of the Empire. And I kind of set those up, you know, vertically next to the play area, and then set up the decks and put out the tokens and everything. And people just, you know, they'd see it. And L5R has very pretty packaging and very nicely designed cards, components. Everything is just very pretty. I've got a lot of like custom stuff I've gotten through, you know, luxury playstyle or whatever. But I stayed away from bringing those because I wanted people to see what they'd actually be getting. And not be like, I don't know, scared away by crazy bling that looks expensive.
Yeah, that's a good point. The game shows itself well, right? Like you said, I still use the core box and I use Children of the Empire, Emperor. I always get that wrong.
Empire.
Yeah. I use those boxes to carry my stuff around. And like, I just like knowing like this is my L5R stuff. It like has all the artwork on it. And like, yeah, there's totally a ton of stuff that like, I actually hate throwing out the packaging for all of the boxes that we get.
I usually have no qualms in throwing out FFG packaging, but I was looking, I think I just threw out the Unicorn Clan pack box, but I was looking at the art for like Chagatai and I was like, man, that is so cool.
It's so good. Yeah. Yeah. And I think I
the playmat instead.
Yeah. I've not been able to bring myself to throw any of that away.
Your screenshot even had like, you had the books out too, right? To show like there's story behind this. There's like artwork that people have put like, you know, hours of their life into. And like, this is like, not like, you know, a flash of the pan. This has been 20 something more years plus FFG's takeover of it.
Yes, absolutely. I put out the books. They're very pretty books. They also catch the eye. You know, people would come up and just be like, they'd have this look of like, whoa, what is this on their face? Somebody was like, is this your game? Did you design this? I was like, ha ha, no. But yeah, so I mean, people have no idea what this is and they see it and it's just such a nice design. And that's a big reason why I also chose to just go with the Fantasy Flight Games clear sleeves rather than having, you know, my own dragon shields or something. Yeah. Because, you know, the card backs are pretty and they also, I want people to be able to see those as well.
And they kind of line up well with that two player mat too, because the mat uses those card backs as the examples of where everything should go, provinces and things like that. So.
Exactly right.
So how did you introduce the game to people?
So yeah, so people would walk up and they'd look at it. And I mean, the very first thing I would ask them is, do you want to learn how to play Legend of the Five Rings? If they didn't ask me a question first, if they started asking me questions, then obviously I'm going to, you know, answer their questions because that's, they're telling you what they want to know. They're telling you what they're interested in. But if they just kind of stood there and were and just like stared for a second, I would just lead with that. And I was surprised by how many people were just like, sure, yes, I do want to. And so we'd sit down and play. So I'd ask them, do you want to be Crane or Lion? So actually, let's talk real quick about the decks I chose.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So, let's do that. So Crane and Lion, huh? Kind of a classic matchup.
Right. So what I did, so my first idea was, hey, I'm going to use all the cards from my collection. I'm going to look for cool and interesting cards that aren't too complicated, don't have, you know, negative play experiences. And I'm going to build a deck for every clan. I'm going to find out what clan people are interested in. And I'm going to give them the clan they like. And then I'm going to pick something we're going to play. We're going to have a good time. And so first of all, trying to build a deck for each clan is just ridiculously time consuming, especially since I really only know how to play Crane or build Crane. And I did get a little help from people online with like ideas and I was showing them stuff and I don't know. It was just getting out of hand.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. No, and like that's a very daunting. I think I just thought about what you said and I kind of got like very beklempt over here.
Yeah. I gave it some thought. I got some feedback from people and they were like, you know, people don't know what clan they want to be. When you can sit there and talk to them about that, but really what you want to do is just get them playing as fast as possible. And so I just decided, you know what? I'm just going to use core set cards. I'm going to take exactly the deck that they have in the Learn to Play guide. Exactly that deck. I'm going to fill them out to 40 cards each by adding a second copy of each clan card and then a third copy of a few. Like, obviously, the clan champions. I want them to get a chance to see those. Other cards that just exemplify what the clan does.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah, and honestly, in retrospect, that was just a great idea. It was much easier to just ask people, hey, do you want to play Crane or Lion? And they'll be like, is there a difference? And I'll be like, yeah, one of them's kind of more politically oriented. The other one's more military, kind of more straightforward attack. The other one's a little bit more tricky and control-y. And, you know, and then they'd make a choice and we'd go from there.
Nice.
And so the actual, like, sitting down to play the games, so it's very different teaching a stranger to play the game than, like, your friend or your buddy. Because your buddy or your friend, you know them. You know what they're going to be into. You know what might hook them. You could even pick a clan for them and say, hey, I think you're going to like this or whatever. And you can take your time and whatever. With strangers, you just kind of want to get into it and go. You don't want to focus on the minutiae of the rules. I love spending time talking about the rules of this game.
But yeah, that's not the time. It's just not time to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You did not include like 3x mirrors gaze in the
That would have been so fun.
Great deck.
I didn't even include roll cards.
Oh wow. Yeah.
That's
just
smart.
No roll cards whatsoever. Yeah. So you just did
now, no did reason include, to include like, roll cards when you're demoing the game.
Did you have like keeper or seeker cards in the decks, or you just cut it out?
No.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
No, I don't think the core set even has any.
It does, the initiates. But
oh, okay. Well, no, I did not use those.
That makes sense. There's a surprising amount of stuff to like cover. You know, finding striking the balance between like, okay, you have any idea how to play the game versus this is too much information is really challenging.
Right. So I'd sit them down. I would tell them, okay, spread out your provinces. Put this one under your stronghold, and you know, shuffle your decks a little bit. And I said, you can look at your provinces, and I just take them through the step. Just don't start explaining anything. Just say, do this, you know, take your cards from this deck and put one on each face down. You can look at those, draw four cards. Don't even mention mulligans. There's no reason to. They don't know what's good or bad. And
right. You're
not trying to beat them per se.
No.
So just take whatever you get. It's fine. And then, you know, you show them on the card, do things step by step. Show them the stronghold. Look, this says you get this much honor and this says I get this much honor. So we're each going to take that much honor from the honor pile. Do that. And then when the dynasty phase starts, okay, this says we each get 7 fate. And you know, you give them the little card that shows the phases and the other card that shows the ring effects. You don't explain those. You just have them sitting there and you get to those when you get to them. And you just go step by step. Make yourself the first player so they can see you do things first. When you get to the dynasty phase and you're buying characters, just tell them they can buy characters and show them, and you can put more fate on them. And the reason is that you can put fate on them is because at the end of the round, characters with no fate are going to leave play. You really want to emphasize that. And that's when they kind of like, they look at you and they're like, what? And they kind of like, I don't know. And they get really interested in that because that's very different from like any other card game.
I think actually one of our early podcasts, like we mentioned that. And like, I think Nick was like very big on that. Like that's a big difference about this game from other games. And like that's huge. Like there's a whole mechanic or there's a whole economy around that. But yeah, like just that's like a hook, right? I think you call it a hook in marketing, right? That gets somebody in like, oh, wait, if I don't put extra money on this guy or if I don't invest in this guy, he's not going to stick around. I can't use him anymore. Like that makes a big difference.
And one of the key things there in that dynasty phase is they're going to make some dumb move. They're going to play out a 4-drop with no fate or a 2-drop with 3 fate or 4 fate that doesn't really need it. Just let them do it unless they ask.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
If they ask you, hey, what do you think I should do? If they look confused, you can say, hey, I would do this and answer their question and stop there. Don't go into why. Don't go into, I mean, at most mention when you're buying your guys, like, so I buy a 2-drop with no fate, say, I'm not going to put any fate on this guy. Because if I'm going to put a fate on a guy that's going to stick around, I want him to be a big, more impactful guy. That's kind of like as far as you should take the strategy of dynasty characters.
Yeah, you don't start talking about assassination and
no
the whole like
no.
algebra of it. So, oh, every fate I put on this guy is worth X, and therefore blah 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 blah.
Let
so.
Them like David said, like let them make that mistake. Like let them put three fate on a two coster and let it get assassinated. Like that's just
yes.
That's you won't do that ever
did
again.
Did you assassinate people's like? What do you mean?
Well, it sounds like I tried not to be. There was one time when I attacked with Hotaru into the fire ring, and I may have dishonored their three fate to Turi, honored my Doji Whisperer, and then Noble sacked it.
Oh my god.
I was like, I'm really, 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 really sorry, but this is super cool.
But like, yeah, so like at the same time, right? Like there's that level of like, okay, sometimes things are just gonna be like really, you know, it's gonna be rough, but like you know, when my opponent pulls off a really cool play like that, that's still pretty cool for me, even if I'm on the receiving end of it, you know?
Yeah, I
think so. But I think it's going to depend. In retrospect, I don't think I would have done that. The guy I was playing with didn't seem like he thought it was cool.
Oh, he got put out.
He seemed kind of like, why would you do this to me? He didn't get like upset or anything, but I could tell he wasn't as into it as I was. So in retrospect, maybe I should not have done that.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's hard to read. I mean, like I feel like a lot of people who are interested in this game in the long term do like can appreciate like, oh, damn, like that was crazy. Like, I like that you can do that kind of thing. You know, there's stuff to do in this game. So how long were your average games? Did you play full games or just like, you know, to a limited number of breaks?
Yeah, I played full games with people. I mean, if they wanted to end early, we ended early. I only had one guy. He had to leave early to go catch a ride. Everybody else, one guy was like, I only have 40 minutes and I have to go meet somebody for lunch. And so, you know, 40 minutes in, his girlfriend comes and I think he had already texted her or something because she just sat down and watched and we finished out the game, which took like another hour. So he was obviously really into it, which was super cool for me because I was like, yeah, this is working. It was my first game and it was great. I was there altogether. Let's see, I was there from 10:30 to about 5:30, and I got in a total of four games altogether only, which is it would have been nice to have a second person running
like
other
you're,
games.
You're doing that, you're saying that, and I'm like, I honestly think that's impressive. I don't think I could ever I don't think I could demo four games in that amount of time.
Yeah, and they were more or less back to back. At most I had 10 or 15 minutes between a couple of the games. I just spent all day playing L5R with new people.
If I did that, I know my voice would be like totally shot by the end of it. Like, no. Of course.
No, yeah, it was all right.
Like, I mean, you average it out, right? Like, I can't imagine like teaching the whole game or even like a majority of it and playing a whole game in 2 hours.
Well, it's pretty straightforward once you get through the phases one time. It's there's nothing you have to teach after that. They may have questions now and then, but those are easy to answer.
Yeah,
fair. I think 2 hours is about right for a teaching game. That sounds...
I think it's all about the decks. I tried to do a teaching game for a friend of mine at Gen Con last year at like, don't get me wrong, we started at like 10 p.m. So like just caveat that whole situation. And I had two decks in my box that were just whatever. And it didn't like he was definitely interested in the game, but he's like, this is too much for right. You know, like it was one of those like I think you did the right thing. Like you had the setup correct, you had the right decks, you had like aesthetically everything was like interesting for people. You made sure like you had not confusing situations. For me, I tried it and I was like, oh, I probably shouldn't have tried to teach you a deck that is like really confusing with Scorpion, like you know, yeah, like there's just like
don't start with like the meta hyper tuned decks.
And even if it wasn't like, I don't even think my deck was the way because I had three or four decks in there, but it was still a deck that wasn't a teaching deck. Like you need to come to these things with the idea of like, I know nothing about number one card games, right? You have to assume that first. Number two, if they do know something about card games, they know Magic. And then number three, this is a Magic. So like there's a lot of elements in that. So yeah, so, your deck sounded really good for demoing.
They were perfect. They were exactly what I needed. And I'm glad that I got the feedback that I did to end up in that direction.
Dave, what was the overall response? Did you have anybody like stand up and be like, I'm going to go buy this. Where can I buy this?
I had people say, I had one person, the first guy I played with, he said, you know, okay, I was giving out promo cards, and I was like, here, I'm going to give you a promo card. He's like, well, I'll tell you now, I'm probably not going to buy it. And then I saw him a little bit later. He's waiting in line to, like, go play in, I don't know, some eight-hour tabletop D&D session. Competitive D&D. It sounds awesome. Anyways, he was waiting in line, and, I don't know, his girlfriend was like, he's talking about buying it. I think he's going to buy it. So, yeah, and then and you know, I'd ask everybody that I played with, or that I, and, you know, some people I just talked to that didn't have a chance to play because they were on their way somewhere. You know, did they live in the area, or where did they live? And if they lived nearby, I told them about our store, and they could come and try out the game there if they wanted to, or play more. And people there would loan them cards for decks if they wanted, that kind of thing. You don't have to, you know, buy every expansion, because that was a question. People see all that stuff that I put out to, you know, draw them in, and they're like, wow, it's a lot of different things. Is it? You know, oh, and people really like the living card game aspect. You know, it's like a card game where you build your decks, but when you buy an expansion, you know exactly what you're getting. You're getting a full play set of every card. People, you know, people don't know that exists.
Right.
In this day and age, it's crazy.
And mostly I told them, you know, hey, if you do decide you want to get into this and you want to get all the cards, just buy someone else's collection for like $100.
Yeah, eBay is the way to go, I think.
Yep.
Or like one of the groups on Facebook or something. But so anything that you would do differently?
I would plan it out more in advance. I don't really think I would need to advertise. But yeah, I would try to get in there for more days. And I didn't plan food. I was starving after a few hours, and all my stuff was laid out, and I'm in this open play area, and I'm like, I don't want to pack up. I don't know anybody here.
It sounds like a worse version of a tournament as far as like just constant play, and you're pinned down.
Yeah, I was lucky. The Ed finally stopped by to visit because he was going to give me promos too to give out as well from his store that he had left over. And I was like, hey, what are you doing? He was like, I don't know. I was like, why? I am so hungry. He's like, okay. He went and got me some bulgogi, and that was really nice of him. Thank you, Ed.
So you mentioned the promos. That was something that we wanted to at least highlight, that you got in touch with FFG, right, and got some promos?
Exactly. So I wanted to give out promos. My original plan was just to give out some for my own collection. But I figured I would reach out to FFG and let them know. And I would have done that a little bit earlier as well, because it was about a week before the event that I reached out to them. So I'm sure that put them under a time crunch. But yeah, they got back to me right away and thought what I was doing was cool. And they're like, sure, we'll send you something. And, you know, it got there in like 2 days, and it was great. They sent me like 72 Marauding Oni promos to give out.
What?
And four Whoa. Of those acrylic Imperial Favors that have Satoshi on one side and the Imperial Librarian on the other. I think these are things you could only get day two of Gen Con last
year. Those Marauding Onis are super rare.
Yeah.
Yeah. They sent you a lot of money if you were unethical about it. Yeah, no, we were actually talking about those at Atlanta. Mm-hmm. There was like, they were there and they got sent out for a charity tournament in Lebanon, New Hampshire. And those, yours is the third place I know of that they are available at all.
I think it's like their community thing.
Yeah.
So if somebody from the community needs one for a thing like this, that's what they send. And so I just, now the Imperial Favorites, I didn't know how to give those out. So what I ended up doing, I gave out the four that I had, and I gave out a few of the other promos that Ed gave me to give out to people, stuff like Imperial Storehouses and Upholding Authorities and whatnot. And then the rest of them, everything else I split between my local store here, Game Depot, and Amazing Discoveries to give out to their community. So they each got, you know, over 30 Marauding Onis sitting there, and two of those Imperial Favors.
That's awesome.
Sounds like a good deal.
Yeah.
I'm going to go be flying out to Phoenix, guys. I got a game night to get to.
Go hunt down the Marauding Oni. I've never seen one of those in play.
The card?
Yeah.
It's two fate for a four military. What could go wrong?
Dishonor.
Charge.
Seems like a bad charge target. Well, I guess that's kind of all we... Or wait, no, we have some more questions. Any tips? So do you have any tips for, you know, people that you... I guess we've already sort of covered this, but, you know, anything else that you'd want to give advice to? Like, we might do this. No definite plans, but we might set something up. How?
Yeah, so the main thing is you want to set yourself up where you're... A lot of people are walking by somewhere, you know, out front, not hidden in the back. Display everything out all pretty so people see it and come in. Engage them as soon as they do. You don't want to be distracted talking to somebody else or texting on your phone or whatever. When you're actually teaching the game, just, you know, be as bare bones as possible, really. You really don't want to get into, like I said, the minutiae of strategy or anything like that. I didn't really get into the lore at all with people. Nobody really asked about it, and I don't know. The game takes enough brain power as it is, teaching the game. If I had more downtime before or after games and people were hanging around, I would have probably chatted about that some. Let people know, hey, it exists. You know, here's the books. And I know a lot of people that are into this game are big fans for decades, and you're passionate about it and you want to get into it and tell everybody everything about it. But you're going to overwhelm people if you go too far. If you're like, yeah, this game's been out for 30 years and listen to all these crazy story choice things that happened. Now, for some people, that's a big selling point. That's like, ooh, that's cool. And there's story stuff going on now in the events. But these strangers that you're meeting at a con or whatever, you just want to get them to see if they enjoy the game and kind of focus on that. Because none of that other stuff really matters if they don't enjoy the game and is going to be distracting and some people even scare them away.
Yeah, that's really, really true. Sorry to cut you off there. Like, I feel like that's the case a lot of times with any game, right? And like, I think you need to kind of balance it out, and you need that person there that if someone asks the right question, there's an answer, but you also need to make sure the person that's there to answer that question isn't someone that's going to answer every question for the person that is like sort of just like asking the question to be kind of courteous.
That guy's named Nick.
No, there's somebody else. No, that's not Nick. Nick is actually the perfect person to have.
No. That's what I'm saying. The perfect person, not.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Nick is the perfect human being.
I understand. Yeah, that is true.
I think that there is
perfect
like
human being. Hold on, back that up. He's not the perfect human being.
Perfection.
He's still there.
Look, I mean, the man's just stating his. He's the Hanamoto opinion.
He's the Hanamoto, Eric. He's not like a godsend.
They only give those out to
people. Not a commie.
No, but I think there is, you know, it's worth mentioning to people like, hey, there's story that is, you know, people who do well in events choose story things. And I think that's probably as much as I would say, like, there's a lore that the players get to influence by playing the game.
Yeah, I think people will notice that you enjoy the game and that you're into it and that you're passionate about it. And they'll pick up on that and they'll be like, wow, this might be a cool thing.
Yeah. I think, and kind of go back to community, because I think that's so huge for us, and I think you too, is that it kind of goes without saying, but the Discord channel or the Discord group that's like the international one, what they've done to give us as a player base like an identity, right? Like, I think we have an identity to play games on Jugoku. We have an identity to be in the Crane chat, in the Scorpion chat, in the Dragon chat. Like, all those things are kind of really interesting. I think that's something to probably touch on. Like, not to kind of like emphasize so much, but like just say like, hey, you're interested in playing this clan? There's a bunch of people in the world that are really hot and heavy on Dragon. You should go. If you're really interested, you don't have to buy anything. You can go play games for free online and you can join this chat and get like insight. And then all of a sudden, like, that's a really good hook.
Yeah, for sure.
Play online's good.
Yeah, the Discord's amazing. I would not be a player of this game if the Discord didn't exist.
I agree. Absolutely not. Yeah. I don't think FFG realizes what they've gotten for free. Like, yeah, that Discord is so good.
Yep.
I don't take advantage of it enough, but it's really good.
Yeah, because the alternative is what? Facebook. And oh my God.
What?
What's yeah, that's that? That's the right response.
Yeah, exactly. So Cool. Well, hey, I think that's all of our questions, right?
Yeah, I think that will do it. So thank you, David, for joining us. It's been really great and definitely gives us some stuff to think about when we go back and try to do the similar thing on our own.
Hey, I encourage you to do it. We need more new people.
How would somebody that wants to reach out to you find you besides Alpha Squid on Discord? Like, what's your best way of getting a hold of, what's the best way to get a hold of you if they want to kind of like pick your brains on all the stuff you've told us today and kind of do the same thing as you did?
I mean, that is the best way is going to be through that Discord. I'm on there all the time, probably too much. And yeah, that would be absolutely the best way. If you want to reach out to me on Facebook, you can. I might respond to you eventually someday, but I probably won't even know that you've sent me a message if you try that. So Discord, definitely Discord, Alpha Squid.
So we will have a link to the global Discord again in the show notes. There have been in previous show notes, but the global L5R Discord is the place to be. Yeah.
Cool. All right, folks. So I think that will do it for the Meek Informant tonight. Yeah, you can always check us out on Twitch, YouTube. We're on Twitter. I'm sure I'm forgetting other venues where we
that's
exist.
That's in the outro. The most important part is that samurai, seldom known as peasants, but peasants always known as samurai. Yay. Thanks for writing
it
that.
It had to be written down like 30 times.
I only put it in our show notes. No, that 30. That's 100. I put that at 100. It's 100 pace. The Shining.
All work and no play make peasants always known as samurai.
Make Eric go crazy.
All right. Good night, folks.
You've been listening to The Meek Informant. You can find us on the web at www.facebook.com/TheMeekInformant. And can subscribe to our podcast through Google's podcast app, Apple's podcast app via iTunes or Podbean at themeekinformant.podbean.com/feed.xml. Want to continue the conversation about today's topic or any of our other content? We can be reached via our Facebook page or email themeekinformant@gmail.com. We also have a Twitter account, @MeekInformant. Our YouTube or Twitch accounts can also be found by searching for The Meek Informant. If you would like to help others find us, please consider writing a review on iTunes or wherever you subscribe to our show. Thanks for listening, and remember, samurai seldom notice peasants. Peasants always notice samurai.